One Law for All is a sprawling political thriller that begins as a family ranch mystery and slowly unfolds into a global conspiracy about technology, control, and human manipulation. The story opens in Washington, D.C., at Carol and Carl's wedding, where the usual gang of friends and partners has gathered: Jimmy, Mac, Kitiona, Ben, Bob, Juan, Dominique, Carol, and Carl. The mood is playful and affectionate, with jokes about wedding trauma, tequila, and hangovers. But even in these first pages, the novel plants the seeds of something much darker. The group is discussing their foundation, its investments, and the rapid rise of artificial intelligence. What seems at first like casual conversation about a useful tool quickly shifts into unease when they notice a strange futuristic bank robbery in Nepal. The robbery is unsettling, not just because of the stolen money, but because it suggests a world where advanced technology, coordinated movement, and precision deception are increasingly difficult to distinguish from normal events. That opening frames one of the book's major ideas. AI is not just innovation, it is also an instrument of surveillance, hallucination, prediction, and influence. At the same time, the novel introduces its emotional center back at the Rockin' O' Ranch in Montana, where Ida, Carol's grandmother, is approached by a mysterious stranger. Ida is 98 years old, sharp, and difficult to surprise. So the man's appearance immediately signals that he is no ordinary visitor. He seems to know her intimately. Their reunion, conducted in German, is moving and unsettling. Ida becomes visibly overwhelmed, and Jen, who witnesses the scene, senses that this is a moment from the past returning with enormous force. A stranger's presence and Ida's reaction to him become the mystery that drives the first half of the novel. Jack and Jen are left trying to understand who he is, why he has come, and what danger follows him. That danger arrives almost immediately when Ida's cottage is destroyed in a fire. Jack hears a strange whining sound near the corral, rushes outside, and watches the cottage explode. The scene is vivid and traumatic, with smoke, ash, melted debris, and the sense that something was deliberately erased. Jack and Jen respond like a practical ranch people first, and detective second. They call the sheriff and fire chief, inspect the wreckage, and begin to search for evidence, but the story keeps returning to the strange details: the odor of chemicals, the odd mechanical sound, and the possibility that the explosion was not an accident at all. The destruction of the cottage is the novel's inciting crime, but the author uses it as more than a simple whodunit. The fire is the first visible effect of a larger system of hidden power. Meanwhile, the wedding in D.C. continues. And the contrast between celebration and crisis becomes one of the novel's most effective structural devices. The bride and groom walk the Lincoln Memorial grounds, while outside, a protest led by Ear and her group, the Demons, erupts into anti-constitutional outrage. Ear, short for Echo Annette Rodriguez, is introduced as a volatile political performer with ambitions far larger than ordinary activism. She is obnoxious, seductive, and skilled at mobilizing crowds. Vera, her mentor and handler, is the real strategic intelligence behind her rise. The two women are tied to a shadow organization called The Group, which uses politics, media, money, and chemistry in a coordinated campaign for influence. Ear's public persona is loud and chaotic, but the group's real plan is methodical. The investigation into the ranch fire deepens through a series of collaborative efforts by the Foundation team. Carol, Carl, Jack, Jen, Mac, Kitiona, Ben, Jimmy, Juan, Dominique, and Bob all contribute different skills. This teamwork is one of the novel's strongest patterns. No single person solves the mystery alone. Jen notices emotional and physical details others miss. Bob uses scanning and technical tools. Carl and Carol use their DC connections and political access. Jimmy asks wild questions that often shake loose useful information. Ben keeps everyone focused. Kitiona coordinates and interprets patterns. Juan and Dominique help track suspects and gather outside information. The story repeatedly emphasizes that understanding hidden power requires pooling eyewitness accounts, digital tools, intuition, memory, and trust. Their first major lead is Frederick Keller's notebook, a crucial narrative device that turns the novel into a layered historical mystery. The notebook contains sketches of orchids, birds, tattoos, equations, chemical formulas, and fragments of a life story. It becomes clear that Frederick was not simply a visitor to Ida's ranch. He was her long-lost husband, linked to a German past that reaches back to Nazi-era ambitions. As Travis, the interpreter, begins reading from the notebook, the group learns about Ida and Frederick's escape from Hitler's Germany. their fear of the regime's scientific and ideological projects, and Frederick's work in a secret research environment in South America. The notebook reveals a program centered on orchids, cell membranes, youth-preserving chemicals, and human enhancement. The details are strange enough to feel almost science fiction, but the book treats them as the natural extension of real historical ambition. If the Nazis wanted a master race, then chemical and biological experimentation would be part of that dream. The middle of the novel follows parallel threads that gradually converge. One thread stays with the Montana investigation, where the Foundation examines the cottage site, scans the wreckage in 3D, and pieces together the method of the attack. They discover that the killers likely used sleeping gas or a chemical to knock out Ida and Frederick before setting the fire and blowing the cottage apart. They find evidence of electric bikes, Chinese manufacturing, and a woman's fingerprints that point to Laura Preston. The electric bike detail matters because it shows how modern technology can serve older crimes. The riders arrive silently, move quickly, and leave little trace. Their equipment blends into the landscape, even as it enables assassination. Another thread follows the international movement of EAR and Vera as they travel through group facilities in Brasilia, then elsewhere, learning how the organization works from the inside. This part of the book broadens the novel from a ranch mystery into a world conspiracy. The group presents itself as a force for peace, economic fairness, and universal legal order. It speaks the language of stability, anti-crime policy, and global improvement. But the rhetoric becomes chilling as the details emerge. Idea is not a democratic ideal in this world. It is a slogan used to justify a control regime. The group wants a universal legal standard, but it also wants feudal-style hierarchy, obedience, and a population managed through selective economic promises. Their philosophy is that ideology matters more than weapons. If people can be made to believe that order is justice and dependency is fairness, then actual force becomes almost unnecessary. Artificial intelligence is one of the group's key tools. Their AI center, Brain Trust, and predictive systems are described as tools that read patterns, monitor political emotions, and influence elections and public behavior. They use surveillance, NSA infiltration, data analysis, and predictive modeling to anticipate human choices. But the novel stresses that this is not neutral technology. It is a machine for shaping reality. Hallucinations, mental fog, and chemical influence all blur the line between thought and manipulation. The eye drops are the most disturbing expression of this theme. At first, they seem like an anti-aging beauty product. In fact, they are a youth-preserving drug with behavioral effects. They can energize, seduce, stabilize, and make people more compliant. They are central to recruitment and leverage. Those who use them appear younger, more attractive, and more confident, which makes them politically useful and sexually persuasive. The group's strategy is to couple these drops with influence, luxury, and status so that people do not merely obey. They desire to belong. Vera is the clearest example of this method. She is older than she appears, deeply embedded in the organization, and fully committed to its worldview. She mentors ER, who is hungry for power, flattery, and access. ER is gradually inducted into the group's logic by being rewarded with private flights, luxury accommodations, sexual attention, and the promise of political ascent. She is groomed as a rising figure who might one day become vice president or more. Her transformation is not based on ideology in any sincere sense. It is based on vanity, ambition, and the chemical pleasures that the group knows how to provide. The book suggests that the easiest way to control someone is not always fear. Sometimes it is validation. The Frederick Keller notebook gradually becomes the key to the entire conspiracy. Frederick's notes reveal that he was researching orchids because they contained ingredients for a liquid that could preserve youth and potentially alter human behavior at the cellular level. The notebook also reveals charts, formulas, and references to a broader population control project. Once the group confirms Frederick's identity, the story reveals that he had been working in a South American lab connected to the group's origins. His research was not merely scientific in the abstract. It was the foundation for a transnational system built to influence elites, elections, and social order. The novel treats this as a legacy of Nazi scientific fantasy adapted to the language of modern governance and economic fairness. As the Foundation travels to Brasilia and later to Colombia and other locations, the conspiracy takes on geopolitical scale. They meet politicians, diplomats, and group functionaries in settings of polished luxury. The headquarters itself feels like a hybrid of corporate campus, research complex, and indoctrination center. Inside, there are dorms, dining halls, recreation spaces, labs, greenhouses, and rooms full of strange AI technologies and biological specimens. The group is not just a political network. It is a lifestyle, a cult, and a manufacturing system. It seduces people with comfort, beauty, and access, then binds them with secrecy and chemical dependency. One of the most unsettling sequences comes when ER and Vera receive a guided tour of the group's facilities. They see the eyedrop production area, the AI center, and the fish tank room containing preserved brains associated with famous historical figures. The effect is both grotesque and symbolic. Power is literally stored, studied, and replicated. The group claims to be moving humanity toward a more just world, but its methods are invasive and dehumanizing. Its leaders talk about peace while building a system of selective punishment and disappearance. They talk about economic equality while constructing a feudal hierarchy. They talk about universal law while maintaining secret safe countries and disposable populations. Back in Montana, the family investigation grows more personal as Carol's mother, Fritz, tells the story of Ida's youth in Germany. Through diary readings, the reader learns how Ida and Frederick fell in love, fled Nazi Germany by way of rat lines, and eventually carried their secret across decades and continents. The diary becomes an emotional anchor, linking the modern mystery to the historical trauma behind it. Ida's past explains why the stranger mattered so deeply, why his reappearance was so shocking, and why his notebook contains both scientific and emotional fragments. The book does not separate love from history. It shows how the personal and political are inseparable when regimes and clandestine programs shape entire lives. The final section of the novel turns the investigative pressure into open confrontation. Carol, Carl, Ben, Bob, Jack, Jen, Kitiona, Jimmy, Juan, Dominique, and others continue connecting the dots between the ranch fire, the mysterious couple, the group's international movement, and the role of Frederick Keller. They identify the people responsible for the attack on Ida's cottage, and they learn that the group's use of youth liquid and prediction additives has given them leverage over politicians worldwide. Frederick's discovery made the group more than a secretive club. It became a political machine. The youth liquid extends life and appearance. The prediction additive makes the brain trust more effective at reading public reaction and shaping elections. Together, these tools create a system where dependency, not persuasion, is the real foundation of power. The book's title, One Law for All, is revealed as an ironic warning. What sounds like fairness is actually the slogan of totalization. The group wants one law because one law can erase local resistance, national sovereignty, and moral pluralism. In theory, universal law suggests equality. In practice, it means centralized authority, selective enforcement, and a hidden elite managing everyone else. The novel's answer to that system is the foundation itself. A network of ordinary people with different talents who refuse to let a mystery remain hidden. They investigate, compare stories, decode notebooks, cross-check surveillance, and rely on each other. In a world where artificial intelligence, propaganda, and chemical manipulation are all being used to shape reality, their greatest strength is human collaboration. By the end, the reader understands that the cottage fire was only the first visible crack in a much larger structure. Ida and Frederick's past connected to Nazi science, South American labs, orchids, youth-preserving chemicals, and a long-running plan to engineer obedience through beauty, pleasure, and fear. EAR's rise reveals how the group recruits ambitious people with gifts, flattery, and chemicals. The brain trust shows how predictive technology can become a political weapon. And the Foundation's persistent teamwork shows the opposite principle, that truth can still be found when people pool what they know, keep asking questions, and refuse to be dazzled by the promise of order.